This is tape 5, Donald Butler. The date is July 22, 1993. Judy Rubenstein and Gabby Denman are interviewing at his home.
Okay. Will you tell us some of your social life and life with your family vacations, those sorts of things?
Yeah, we've always taken time for family. And most of our vacations, well, all of our vacations were family vacations. Jokingly once said, first of all, I rarely travel alone. Nancy and I have always traveled together. And I use the expression that a Jewish man should travel with his wife and his tallest and his film in that order.
I'm writing it down.
This might be one of the most profound statements for future years and present years.
We always went, and the children would always travel with the children. We used to go to Boston about 2 or 3 times a year to be with my in-laws. And we would spend our summers in Winthrop. Winthrop is North Shore, just outside of Boston, where my in-laws would spend the summer as well. And in the early days, that was in the days when Civic Light Opera was just starting and I was involved with them, I would go up and we'd spend about 3 weeks together. And I would come back and finish up with the last shows at the Civic Light Opera, and then go back there for another week or so and bring them all back home in the summer. And we spend the full summers there. And we still go up to the Cape every once in a while. We try to get away as much as we can. We were just last week in Long Beach. But it's now most of our traveling is done to the children, visit with them. But we went across country together. We went on a cross country trip, and
with the children.
Yeah, with the children. Mm-hmm. And we've been to Europe and to Israel. Traveling. I have airlines bills to prove it.
What are your hobbies?
Work. I enjoy my work very much. And of course I'm involved in a number of Jewish enterprises, some general things in the community.
Tell us some of your involvement in the larger community first?
Nothing the great involved. Mm-hmm. Most of my activity has been in the Jewish field. Mm-hmm. And in Jewish education, I still employ the founding members. And the synagogue, for good, bad, or otherwise, the Kollel was founded here in this room. Still maintain our interest in a number of Jewish enterprises, nationally and otherwise.
Are you also on the board of Jewish Family and Children?
Yeah, I just left the presidency and still I'm on the board. I'm on the national board of Jewish Family and Children Service. And my last very interesting thing is I sit on a commission. You may have read couple weeks ago in the Chronicle, that the Federation will receive an award, public relations. Well, I'm on that commission nationally. There are about 15 of us from all over the country. And we're supposed to judge the best campaigns. So this year, my job, they sent me, maybe about 40 or 50 newspapers. I was to go over the newspapers to see and to judge which was the best written letter.
Did they cut the masthead off?
No, no. They didn't give me Pittsburgh.
Okay.
See, none of us had all of the time. Prior to that, I used to go up to New York for this. We used to spend the day in New York and listen to videos and, all the stuff and exhibits. But that became very cumbersome. So instead of us, each of us going to New York to sit together, we do it individually. They send us material, and we rate them and we judge them. It was very interesting. I didn't get Pittsburgh. You know, in Jewish law, a person who is part of something cannot be a witness. For example, a husband or a wife can't be a witness against each other, children can't be a witness, family, because you are involved. So I guess they drew a successful conclusion, and they didn't give me Pittsburgh.
Was this for Federation?
Yeah. The United States. Federation nationally, the Council of Federation of the Norfolk Times.
It's almost surprising that you had close ties with the Jewish Chronicle?
I was on the founding board for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I was the one who hired Al Bloom. I was invited to serve on that board before the founding. We set up, because when we bought it, we put the criterion in the American Jewish Outlook to form the Jewish Chronicle. And Beck Kaplan was at that time, Joe Feldman. I think one of the reasons that I was invited, with respect, and I appreciated the invitation, because it was a wonderful experience. But I think I was probably the only one in that business in the city to be involved in. But it was a very interesting experience. And Zucker still blames me for the fact that he got stuck with that job, which he loves very much.
I know you're very modest, but how do you view your accomplishments?
I always joke, the guy says, you see, you can see I'm modest. I have a medal for my modesty. would like to do more.
What would you like to do yet that you haven't accomplished?
Learn more, study more. I still study Talmud every week. Sure, Shas. It's a Talmud class. I still relearning some of the Gemaras that I learned. But it's, I'd like to learn. I don't really have the patience to study too much. But that would be my, I'm very, a person should never say you're satisfied with what you've done. I'm very comfortable. I feel good about it.
What do you view as your most significant accomplishment?
Wonderful wife and wonderful kids. That's not my accomplishment, but I mean, that's the greatest thing in the world. And this house, thank God, has always been full. And we have many, many happy things, parties. Our Shabbos table was always full of people. And now, one of the nicest things I think we're doing, and that is we're deeply involved with the transparent people. And Chauncey has a book called The Book of Talk, which is unbelievable. We get calls from all over the world. And we don't talk about it. Just had a call. Very lovely thing. We had a man here. I think I may have told you. He was the designer of the unmanned missile plane from Israel. There was one man, I have a picture of him, he had a liver transplant there. And he lives in Rehovot. As a matter of fact, our last trip to Israel, we spent the whole month, visiting with our alumni.
Oh,
with
wow.
All the people that have been, people who have lived with us for 2-3 months at a time, their families, that is.
Nice.
And this man, it's a climber, was in Vancouver, a reunion of an Olympics for the transplant people. And he won a silver medal in tennis.
Wow.
Sweet guy. His wife. We visited with them. Yes. Many of them, thank God, okay. Some of them, unfortunately, we've made the point to visit with them.
How did you become involved with them in the first place?
Well, when Rabbi Sacklin was here, they lived in a house right across the street. And his wife, Fabie, is a fantastic person, a wonderful, wonderful girl. And she and Clancy were very, very close. There's a mother, daughter, sister, sister relationship. And we had an occasion, somebody came here once, a friend from New York called, said, "So Boris is coming. Wife is to get a liver transplant. We'll see what you can help." So Faggy at that time got the call, and friends of theirs, and they were going away. And he said, "Maybe can you house this fellow? I care." I said, "Look, I see fabulously expensive the hotels at that time. University Inn for the favor was $60 a night."
That was the same family.
Oh, yeah, family house came much later. We've been in this business for about 12 years.
Wow.
Business. Anyway, Marty Greenfield stayed here. And his wife was unfortunately never married. She didn't get to live here. And he was here for about 2.5-3 months, lived in our home. And with that, her father, brother, his father, his mother, became very fast friends. Mothers, sisters, brothers, they all came. We've had 6-7 people in the house at one time, you know, sleeping there. We have a large home, thank God. Look, we have a fight. Not for us, why should we share it? So we, and Clancy's is amazing. She's fantastic. Very prepared when you're by yourself. Prepare a meal in the evening. We've always had breakfast together. That's one meal we sure eat together. Full breakfast. But she had prepared 3 meals a day.
And a lot of food.
And these are people that are under much stress.
No, that's
sure.
The big thing.
It's not
you
just
got,
having people.
You've
got
to keep them up.
We sure.
Take them out at night and just take them for a ride or go out for ice cream or something else. Just, their families would come in. And what are you going to do? You're going to sit and unfortunately, Marty's wife didn't make it. Curiously enough, he remarried and insisted on that we come to the wedding.
And did you?
Yeah. And curiously enough, you know the concept of Sheva Brachos, the week after the wedding. He wanted to have the Sheva Brachos in Pittsburgh. We introduced him around a lot of people. And we had it here. And he and his wife stayed there. And she's channel. We did the whole wedding. His wife, she got a pass to come out of the hospital. And she stayed in his house for about 8 days during Sukkos, during the holiday, and she went back in the hospital. So once he redid the whole bedroom. These are moving moments in a lifetime, and but we've had some unfortunate times. And I don't know why should I inject the sad note? It's very worrying. I bet there's no purpose in it. But and friends call us, so you know, friends all over the country. Thank God, Paulus and so and so is coming. See what you can do here. We had one doctor who was here, just left Pittsburgh. He was at West Penn Hospital, and his mother and father brought him to Pittsburgh to set him up in an apartment. And somebody told me they come to call Hans and his father. So they called, and we had him for Shabbos, and we had him periodically. And just he left 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. His mother came up to sort of put his stuff together. And this was where they started. This was the last week they had dinner with us. We have a very wonderful, wonderful alumni of people, friends that are really devoted. And it's just we try to go wherever there's a symphony. We try to go. Weddings or this one thing. It was a young boy, a young man, was married, had a child, who here for a liver transplant. And much as in their own psyche, in their own mind, he felt he was never going to make it. And he didn't. The night that he passed away, his wife and her mother, his mother was at the hospital, and about 5 o'clock in the morning, I got a call. I called Rabbi Sack and I said, "Leo, we got to go down to the hospital right away." And then I said, "You take care of whatever has to be done. And I'll stay with the mother." So we waited in the hospital, and then I brought her home. Brought her here. About 7:30 on Sunday morning, and wife and mother was asleep, and we had the trauma, and we wanted the trauma of the whole thing, and then I arranged to, and Raya, the children's were wonderful, and I arranged for the funeral, it had to be the same day, in Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Why does it have to be the same?
The general view.
And it has to be before Shabbos?
No, it's just, when you get off, you don't keep the person.
Mm-hmm.
No, and that's what the Buddha's idea is, to bury as fast as possible. So they wanted to bury the same day. Well, I don't know, depending on when they woke up from the reawakened them, told them. But anyway, so they arranged a passage for them, arranged everything. And I bought the tickets. I would say they had 400 people before that afternoon. Amazing. A very lovely family in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And they named the gym the schools after him. Anyway, but that was an experience that was horrifying. On the other hand, there are so many good and wonderful experiences we've had. So many very warm friendships with people that we never knew existed. We were in Israel just recently. It was last December, and we spent some time with a family who was here for 3 months. The young man who was a psychologist in Jerusalem, an American boy, they made Aliyah. His father was a doctor in New York, and they made Aliyah. And this boy, he's about 28, 30, the day that his youngest child was born, they told him he had a little problem. So, and go to Pittsburgh. So he came, his wife, mother and father, and one of the older children, about 4 years old, and the baby. They're here for the, I got the kids down, and I had them all set up, and they stayed here for about, about 3 months. And fortunately, thank God, everything was wonderful. Back and we spent time with them.
That's great.
Yeah, that's the
so that's
wonderful moments. But I don't know, the burden of these things, but it's not important.
It sounds like you have
gone with the flow.
Well, and it have evolved also, and certainly with Pittsburgh. Are there any contrasts that you would just like to make about the city as a whole?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. That anybody that has tasted Pittsburgh hates to leave it.
Okay.
They all have it. They all want to come back. They all come back. Come back to this. We had a bar mitzvah last week. And cystic fibrosis doctor, Atlas, who was at Children's Hospital, came to the bar mitzvah, brought his whole family. He wanted to come back to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is so well. It's a wonderful, wonderful city, and the Jewish community is really magnificent. The general community is nice. I mean, the people stop and let you drive, walk by when they stop their car. And New Yorkers can never understand this. They just keep going. But the Jewish community, and particularly in the observant community, we've had you have Israelis who come here. And some of them are observant, some are not. And we've had the experience that we had family that was for quite a while with kids. And they came with other people, and other people, and they were unhappy. And they were thrilled because they were enveloped by a wonderful community. And that's, when I was president of the shul, the Paul Tzedek, I remember I coined the phrase Paul Tzedek family. And every Shabbos, I would make an announcement, because when the Rosh Hashanah was started, I would make an announcement that anybody in the shul who is not invited for lunch to see a certain person like me, and we don't want you to go home without lunch. We had a lot of students also. And everybody, there were people who never had a stranger in their home. And after a while, this began to, took a proprietorship. You can't take him, he's my guest. Aww. It was really wonderful. And it's a wonderful, wonderful satisfaction that Jewish community has in this town. And you know, of course, that Pittsburgh is the only Jewish community in the United States that the Jewish community has not changed in over 60 years. But this has been a Jewish community.
Yeah.
Squirrel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ran. Other cities, Detroit, 110 miles, 115 miles, New York, Chicago, North Side, East Side, all of them. But Pittsburgh, the main constant.
Has there been an increase, a significant increase, in observing Jewish family?
Yeah. Tremendous. Tremendous.
Take your time.
This
okay.
is very important. This is going to change the whole tenor of the whole Jewish community.
Okay, say very important.
David Fax, who chairs the Jewish Archive section of the Historical Society, just invited me to be chairman of the nominating committee for the next year.
Well, at least you won't have to be president,
no,
anyway, because if you're on the nominating committee, it's a Jewish thing.
You were talking about the Orthodox community.
Yes. A burgeoning Jewish community, and we have a tremendous number of Jewish doctors, observant young men who are observant in to the nth degree in traditional and positive Judaism, and they, I know, for example, in our synagogue, we must have I'm not exaggerating if I say we have 30 doctors. You know, it's an interesting thing. In Pittsburgh, all the synagogues were organized by tradesmen and landsmen. In other words, everybody came from Poland, went to the Polish shul. Everybody came from Russia, went to the Russian shul. But they also had, for example, they had the huckster shul. You know, remember the hucksters used to go around in the horse and wagon, and you know, selling onions? Well, all the hucksters would come to one shul. The one shul here was called the huckster shul,
What shul was that?
That was, I think that was Or Chedesh. What's the Avenue Light? Then the Kesser Torah. Kesser Torah were the scrap dealers, rag peddlers. You know,
never knew that.
That was the way the shul used to call it. And then there was the Rishi Shul, and there was the Purvish Shul, and there was the Sinir Shul. People came from that section of Europe. And everybody, I jokingly said at a recent gathering, I said, we have the public study because the doctor's shul. If you, God forbid, you have to get sick, the public study would be the best place. Because here you got heart specialists, Joel Weinberg and Lee Weinberg, and you got Mark Sperling, who heads the Children's Hospital. He's a Vera Heinz professor of children. He lobbies there. And you got the cystic fibrosis guys, and you got
Dr. Mark May.
Well, Mark adopted Charitora. There are, so many that you're surrounded by doctors, and all of the young, the new people who come here all seem to gravitate to that one area. And they're all day school educated, yeshiva educated, very observant people, lovely wives. It's been if you take, for example, Manny Cannell. Manny Cannell heads the MRI here. And he, we had with us last Shabbos when I came back from Israel. They have several children, all of them day schools, and all these remarkable community. And if you may have noticed, I don't use the term orthodox.
Mm-hmm.
You say observant. You see, my philosophy is that everybody's a Jew. We're all Jews, Orthodox and conservative, all Jews. Some more observant, some less observant. More knowledgeable, some less knowledgeable. And everybody's Jewish. You dare not demean another Jew. I say the only thing there are no such things as Orthodox and Conservative Reformed Jews. They're all Jews. There are, however, Orthodox and Conservative Reformed rabbis. but as far as the Jews, everybody's the same. I read an article. Somebody said there are two kinds of Jews. There are observant Jews, and those who are not as yet observed.
What percentage of the Jewish community do you think is observant?
That's a hard one. I wouldn't know. I think that it has developed, it has grown over the years. But I would hesitate to get any figure. I don't know. I think that most of the Jews in the community are either conservative or reformed. But there is a very strong... Pittsburgh historically had 22 shuls, all Orthodox shuls in Pittsburgh. I remember 17 of them. All over Pittsburgh. And in the surrounding communities, every little community had a shul. My parents were married in Connellsville. Connellsville had a Jewish mayor. We had a shul. There were burgeoning communities. You know. But as the children got older and people wanted to go to their marriage, so brought them into the city of Pittsburgh. But I would say that I'd venture a guess that there isn't a Jewish family in this city that doesn't boast of a Zadie or somebody with a long beard. Or that the family was observant at one time, by and large.
Do you see a lot of newly observant?
Oh, yeah. Because the day school movement basically movement has made its imprint in America all over, and certainly in Pittsburgh. And you have almost 1,000 children attending day schools in Pittsburgh.
And that's out of a Jewish population of roughly 40,000?
Well, it's less now.
Is that so nationally also?
Oh, yeah. There isn't a city in of any major, of any proportion doesn't have a Jewish day school in Pittsburgh in their city. All over the country. And we were the first Hillel Academy in the country. Denver was the second.
Would you tell us how you view Pittsburgh's Jewish life in the greater community now?
You mean in contrast to the general community, or?
Or its place in the general community.
Well, the Jewish people in Pittsburgh have always enjoyed a very good relationship in the city. And it has changed now because of civil rights laws and so forth. I mean, Duquesne Club never had Jews. But interestingly enough, Gordon Flagg, who was the top honcho at Duquesne Club, and I were very good friends. He was president of the Pittsburgh Opera, and I worked with him many years. I was when Richard Karp was there.